SB Pod is presented by QuickBooks. New business? No problem. Success starts with Intuit QuickBooks. Learn more at QuickBooks.com. Welcome. It's SB Pod on the road from Augusta, Georgia. Stanford Steve? No Stanford Steve this week. He's still in parts unknown. Was last seen in New Orleans weeping like a baby. The Brotherhood takes an L. We've covered with Steve loving Duke, which is really problematic for me in a lot of ways, but, you know, he doesn't have many flaws, you know. And I'm not saying rooting for Duke's a flaw. I'm saying it's just there are a lot. Duke has lots of those fans that there's what? Wait, why? What is it? What's the tie-in? How is it that you? Anyway, he's one of those guys. He was down in New Orleans. What an amazing Duke Carolina game we saw. It lives up to the hype and then some. Significant ratings, which isn't interesting. I don't think anybody outside of our business, but a Saturday night late in New Orleans, back and forth. And it could have been, you know, could have been anyone's game. Mark Williams misses a couple of free throws, and that's gutting for him. Manek missed a couple of free throws for Carolina earlier in the game. I think it turns into, oh, if he would have made this, then that. But I mean, clearly Carolina gets the ball back up one and Love buries a three. And that's a legend. That's a legend maker. Or is it? I don't know. I said when I went on last week with Rich Eisen on Rich's show that, you know, for either team, if you win, you got to beat Finland, right? The United States beat the Soviets. That wasn't the gold medal game. If you didn't beat Finland, then what would it have been? Well, in Carolina's case, well, they beat Duke, but they didn't beat Kansas. They let an enormous lead get away. I'll get to that in a minute. But in the case of Carolina, what they did effectively do is forever win any argument with a Duke fan. I just, again, going back to visiting with Rich last week, I joked about the scene in Step Brothers where they're in tuxedos interviewing, "Hello, Ms. Lady," the famous panned scene. Shut your mouth. Stop talking. I just envision any conversation with a Duke fan where they start talking to Carolina. And no. We came to Cameron, gave your man an L, and we saw you in the Final Four, gave him another, and that was the end of that. Which is, I can't even wrap my head around that from the Duke perspective, because K was undeniably great. I think the greatest ever when you frame it with Wooden and the Final Four era that Wooden existed in, 13 Final Fours, 5 banners in the modern era, in years where everyone made the tournament. As opposed to UCLA when, like, what, 20-some-odd teams. And, I mean, Carolina and Duke wouldn't have made the tournament back in the UCLA heyday because neither of them won the ACC tournament. I mean, that sort of frames how different things were. But even if you don't like Mike Krzyzewski, and clearly there are lots of people that celebrated this loss as if they were Carolina fans, there's no arguing what he was, which is one of, if not the greatest all-time coach. And yet, if you're Carolina, you beat him the last two times you saw him in his place and in the Final Four. It's astounding. But they didn't beat KU. I was convinced that just like Gonzaga last year in the Final Four in that incredible game with UCLA, which, better basketball game. I mean, look it up. Both teams shot like 56%. The lead changed hands about 100 times. Suggs banks in a three at the buzzer after UCLA ties it late. I mean, that the game was a better basketball game, I think, fractionally, as great as the Carolina-Duke game was. But Gonzaga was empty. They spent everything they had to beat UCLA, and then they ran into a group of adults from Baylor that were just played with ferocity and housed them. I thought KU would have a similar type of advantage against Carolina because I presumed Carolina would have spent all their mental and physical energy. I was wrong. Carolina had a double-digit lead at the half, and the lack of their bench, Baycott getting hurt late, a lot of things conspired to beat him, and not the least of which was McCormick hitting massive shots, Remy Martin hitting some significant shots. Abaje was amazing this year. I don't know how McCormick wasn't the most outstanding player of the Final Four. I don't get that, but neither here nor there. In Lawrence, they celebrate title number 2 for Bill Self. And It was wild being here at Augusta, walking around. Everybody was, you know, what do you think? Everyone wants to know who should I take? Like, what am I? Stanford Steve? I'm not the one on the gambling show. Beats the hell out of me. I said, you know, you're not morally obligated to bet a side. And then on Tuesday, when we're recording this, everyone wanted to know if it was a bad beat. And I said, well, I mean, the end of that game was rather interesting from that perspective. KU's up 3 with the ball. If they get fouled, they go to the line. Their line was 4, 4.5. But they step out of bounds, so that doesn't allow free throws. And then Carolina gets a look. Kansas didn't foul. That surprised me. I'd foul 100 times out of 100 in that spot. They didn't do that. But Brown challenged the shot from Love, who hit so many big ones in the tournament. He missed in Rock Chalk, Jayhawk, KU. It's the celebration on in Lawrence, Kansas. Don't worry later about what, if anything, comes out of NCAA investigation. That's sort of, I don't know, doesn't seem to have much impact in many cases. Although Will Wade did finally have the Grim Reaper show up for him in Baton Rouge. But nobody in Kansas gives a rat's patoot about the possibility of anything. And I get it, because if somebody came in after the fact and said you have to take a banner down, guess what? Everybody that was in New Orleans, wait a minute. I started to say everybody that was in New Orleans will remember it. They might not. New Orleans is a town where you could forget plenty. Sometimes maybe some things you want to forget, but you know what I mean. Everybody saw it. The one seed wins the title in an epic game, biggest comeback in a finals game ever. So again, if you see Stanford Steve, if you run into him in the airport in New Orleans, just give him an attaboy. Tell him you love him. He's devastated. The Brotherhood took the L in the Final Four. Before we move on, I want to mention quickly here the Hoop Collective with Brian Windhorst. Every Tuesday and Friday, Brian and ESPN's NBA insiders sorting out life in and around the NBA world, and with the NBA playoffs right around the corner, no better time to get in with Windy and the gang. Follow the Hoop Collective with Brian Windhorst wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Time to welcome in my man for more than 20 years, which when I said that out loud on SportsCenter, I was like, holy, how did that happen? It's Andy North. We've been all around the world covering this game. We've been to, I don't even know how many majors and big events. And the storyline again is that guy and Tiger Woods is going to play. I just wonder, having seen him do all he's done and having been there for so many of the moments, I mean, this week is something we've never quite seen. I just wonder, how do you react to hearing what he had to say on Tuesday?
Well, I think, first of all, it's truly amazing that he's even here thinking about this opportunity to play. We didn't know if he was going to make it through the first couple of nights there. We knew it was a horrendous crash. Gene Wojciechowski, who works with us, Gino was at the site and called me because I had to do some stuff on air that night. And we talked about it. He showed me pictures of the actual site where the crash happened. And I'd driven on that road before. And, you know, it's amazing that he's healthy. It's amazing that he's at this point to where he didn't lose his leg. He didn't lose his life. You know, and that's not being dramatic. I mean, that was the truth. That was absolutely the possibility. And you never doubt that he can do anything. He's proved to us time and time again that he can pull off the miracles and the amazing things that he's been able to do. But this is one that I didn't know. I honestly believed, knowing a little bit about orthopedics and some injuries and operations and stuff, that I thought if he could get healthy enough to play golf with his kids, that would be a win. That would be a big win. I didn't really expect him ever to be able to play at this level again. because there's so many variables. I mean, there's so many things you have to figure out. You have to get right and get lucky. And,
right.
You know, he's worked his tail off to get to this point. And, you know, he watching him swing the golf club and hit shots, he looked really good. I mean, he's not just here to do a ceremonial walkthrough and wave at the fans and, you know, think that all is good in the world. He's here trying to win. He's trying to beat these guys. All these kids that look up to him, he's trying to kick their tails. And I think he's got a chance.
Well, that's what he said. I mean, you know, the question was asked and it was the right question to ask. You've always said when you come to a tournament, you come to win. Do you believe you can win? He said, I do. And it wasn't boastful. It was just very matter of fact. I do. And I go back to that the day of that crash, Andy, and I remember going on SportsCenter and, you know, you're just thinking out loud at the moment, emotionally in a sense, because you're talking about someone that you've known for all these years and you're concerned about, are they going to make it? And I remember thinking and saying, look, at this point, he's done enough. He doesn't have to play ever again for anyone. I mean, and he doesn't do it for us, but he doesn't have to play. He could never play again. And he already, as he just did, is a Hall of Famer, as we know. But I remember we all thought, man, if you could just walk again, great. If you could play with Charlie and Sam, great. And that's how I thought up until he played in that event, the father-son, where you're like, oh, cool, look, he looks pretty good out there. But I never thought for a moment this was possible until literally a couple weeks ago when you started hearing people that asked that wouldn't ask if it weren't going to happen. You know what I'm talking about? Like just enough people in the game start talking, you're like, wait a minute, like, what are we doing here? And once he flew up on Tuesday with JT and his son, Charlie, he's not coming up here for and giggles. I've said this repeatedly. Like he was doing recon. How's my body going to react? Right. I mean, you've lived through so many injuries. I mean, it's not the golf. He's never going to forget how to play golf. Question, right? Isn't it always how the body responds?
Well, I think the fact that, you know, where he lives in Florida, you're playing flat golf courses, you're playing off of flat lies. You know, you played a lot of golf in the carts, and once he started walking, you know, you got the sense that, well, maybe he's going to try to play a little bit. You know, maybe I really thought that if he had a chance to come back and play in a major championship this year, it'd have been the Open Championship at St. Andrews. Flat golf course, easy walk, close walks between greens and tees. To me, that was an automatic. That was a setup. If he's going to play anything, to come here, the most difficult of all major championship golf courses to walk, I thought this was, you know, a pipe dream. But he's here and he looks good. And, you know, he's going to fight through the pain and fight through getting tired and all that. And, you know, shoot, if he shoots a good score on Thursday, this place will go crazy. I mean, if he shoots 70 or 69 or something, you know, he doesn't have to shoot 65 or 60 for something. But if he was to shoot 70, it would be unbelievable. It would be absolutely unbelievable.
But if he doesn't, I say it's still a win. Because he is upright and here, put in the work and convinced himself he could do it. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I get that he'd roll his eyes at both of us and be like, yeah, come give me a break. That's not what I do. I appreciate that. But I think we all just appreciate that the competitor in wants to be here to compete. By the way, just this programming note, ESPN Plus. If you don't have it, you know,
you better get it tonight.
10:34 Eastern Thursday. You're going to want it because, and I mean, just we're all in the story business. We're in the cover the story business, and this becomes the story. I joked with players that if he showed up, no one you can do your work anonymously. I mean, I'm looking at Justin Thomas's transcript of his presser. He's the guy you picked to win, isn't he? He's your guy to win. I don't know if he was asked a question about himself. It's because he's the guy who's been playing with Tiger, and everyone wants to know, how's he hitting it? How's he look? Oh wait, you're basically
how about odds. How about me?
No, we're not interested in you and your little you're playing too? That's fun. Have a great time. Tiger. I mean, I do think it's a little probably frustrating is not even the right word. I imagine if you're only asked about other people. But if you're anyone else, and Tuesday, unfortunately, was mostly a washout out here. So, you know, you needed to get your work done in advance, which is interesting because they closed this course on Wednesday in the afternoon to let the crew get it set for Thursday morning. It's gonna be a busy golf course on Wednesday morning just because a lot of Tuesday work didn't happen. But that work, if you're Scottie Scheffler, if you're Rory McIlroy, if you're Justin Thomas, if you're John Rahm, no one's curious about where you are. That's got to be awesome for them, Andy, isn't it?
Oh, to go under the radar here, not to have to deal with all the extra media responsibilities, that's fantastic. If you could, you know, the after the round media, no one's going to care about what guys do unless they shoot 65. And I think that's going to be the case. But it's going to be an interesting week. It's, you know, it's what I think we all love about sport. You just never know what is going to happen. You never have any idea when the St. Joe's of the world are going to, you know, you're going to have these upsets and in this, you know, you're not going to, you don't have any idea. And that's why they keep playing these things. You know, guys come out here and work so hard to get themselves in position to have a chance to win a major championship. And it's going to be a wild week. And I, you know, you'd love to see him play well. I mean, for him. You'd love to see all the work he's put in. You'd love to see him play decent. Well, but if he doesn't, it's, you know, it'll bother him, trust me. But for the rest of us, the fact that he came up here and put it on display, there's a lot of guys that never do this, you know. But he's putting it on display, and he's going out there on a limb, and he's going to try to prove that he can still do this.
I can't believe it's happening. I really, I stuff doesn't much shock me. I mean, goofy things happen. Like you said, I mean, upset. St. Peter's was amazing. Fine. That was a hell of a run and all. But just, it's so rare that a development, particularly one that's so positive, that's such a pleasant surprise, right? There just aren't that many surprises in life. Like, wow, that's really cool. And, you know, coming here to see him, I think we're all in the same boat. It'll be awesome. Let's be reasonable, though, to everybody else, because there's a field. Yep. And it's not a big field, smallest one in major championship golf, and because it includes a bunch of past champions. It's, explain, Andy, how the smallest field also, and in your opinion, it also has sort of the smallest list of people typically year in and year out that can win. Why is that?
Well, I think, you know, we've talked about this for years, that we've looked at the pairing sheets and we've gone through that this guy can win, this guy can win, this guy can win, this guy can't, that sort of thing. And, you know, most years we end up getting maybe 15, 18, 20 guys max. Some years, maybe it's 10. We went through a period where there was one. He was going to win, and that was it, you know?
Right.
And he did it 7 out of 11 majors in that one stretch. But I think this is a golf course that it takes a certain type of player. It takes a certain type of mentality, and you really have to have learned how to play this golf course. You have to understand there's so many putts and chips and approach shots here that are so different than any place you ever play. And if you get the ball on the wrong side of the hole, and we all talk about this, at particularly at major championships, how you have to get the ball in the proper side of the hole to have a chance. This is the one course on earth that if you could put me 25 feet below the hole instead of 10 feet above the hole, I'd take 25 feet every single time, because you can make putts from there. From the wrong side of the hole, you're so defensive, you've got no... You literally, if you make one, it's by accident, because you're just trying to be so careful, because there are putts you can run 6, 7, 8, 10, 15 feet by. Sometimes you can't get any closer than you actually are. There are some putts that, you know, you have to putt away from the hole to get close to the hole. And that stuff you don't practice very much. You don't see that at home. You don't, you know, when you're playing with your buddies, you don't turn your back on the hole and putt it 45 feet away and it comes right back to where it was. That doesn't happen very often. So this is one of those unusual, peculiar places that you have to understand how to play the golf course.
Scottie Scheffler's the world number one. He's played here twice. He's finished in the top 20 both times. Is that enough to do what you're describing? You have to play here. Is a couple of Masters under very different circumstances than this one, is that enough typically to give you the intel you need?
You know, I think this group of younger guys have only played the last couple, and going back to the Masters in the fall in November that Dustin Johnson won, those are totally different kinds of Masters than you could possibly see by the end of this week. It's because of the rain today, it's going to be soft tomorrow, it's going to be soft on Thursday, but they're supposed to get some winds blowing. I would think by Saturday afternoon, we're going to see a really firm, fast golf course.
Once, just quickly for folks that are listening, once the weather goes through, and we may get some thunderstorms on Wednesday, hope we don't, because the par three contest is awesome. Love it. It's great fun. That may happen. But once that goes through, the wind turns on and it looks like it's sunny and really cool actually through the weekend. So by Saturday, Sunday, to your point, Andy, the water that soaked it Tuesday, that'll be long gone.
you know, Morikawa, for example, played for the first time in the fall in 20. And he's actually said, I have no idea what this golf course is going to be like. He saw it a little bit faster the last couple of days, but up until then, he had no idea. So I think there's a bunch of the younger guys that's going to be very, very interesting if it does get really quick and a little bit crispy like we get once in a while at major championships.
Yeah,
the weekend could be real interesting. And here, we haven't had the wind blow. In November, there was no wind at all.
I mean, it was as soft, of course, as you could see. That, to your point, I happened to be in the grill area when the horn had blown, and I sat down to grab a sandwich, and Morikawa, Justin Thomas, sat down, and we were talking. And to your point, Morikawa, I asked him about 11. That's one of the holes that's changed significantly through the years. And he said, you know, I said, it's been soft every year. He said, it wasn't actually, it's a hard hole, but it's been firm and fast. Like, I didn't find it to be particularly difficult. He wasn't saying it was an easy hole, but it wasn't a long hole because you got a bunch of run. Well, now it rains on Tuesday. So what will it play like by the weekend if it's, you know, firm and fast? I just think that's part of what the difference would be. But I also think, Andy, they've never seen it. The Schefflers, the Morikawas of the world, when it's however many patrons there are out here, however, whatever the number is, it'll be a hell of a lot more than there were in 21, and there were none in November. So the feeling, like, you can prepare for, as you say about the greens, Andy, you can't really prepare for that. How do you prepare for what 20,000 people behind the 12th makes you feel like?
Well, I think the big thing is they got a little taste of it yesterday when Tiger was out late in the afternoon. I have never seen so many people on a Monday following a group of players as happened yesterday afternoon.
Nuts.
And it was more like a Saturday or Sunday afternoon with Tiger having a chance to win the golf tournament. That's what was like.
No joke.
There were places, there were 6 and 8 deep where you're down in a valley that you couldn't see anything, but they had to get close to the ropes and see him walk by. You know, it was amazing. So, you know, let's hope he plays well. Let's hope he, does he have to be in the last group on Sunday? Heck no. But
no.
To make the cut and be around for the weekend and play some good golf and leave here feeling that he really accomplished something, I think that would be a really great place for him to be.
Who do you like? I mean, but like Justin Thomas, I think's your pick. We'll get into the details of that on our preview show on Wednesday. But are there other names that you think, I really like this guy's game on this course?
Well, you know, Scotty, we talked about a little bit, a really peculiar number. If you look at the top 10 in the world at the beginning of this year, not a single one of those players have won a tournament yet this year.
Say that again.
Yeah. Now think about that. These are the top 10 players in the world. They have yet to win this year. That's amazing. Now there's some guys that have now moved in and out of that top 10, but the guys Scheffler.
Exactly. Right. Scheffler's number one now because he won. But what Andy's saying is on January the 1st, if you look at the top 10 at the start of the year in the official World Golf Rankings, not one of them has won a tournament.
That's shocking. And you and I have had these discussions over the years here about how many years you've come in here that the top players were all coming in off of wins. They're all coming in really well. They're coming in playing great. Well, this is a year that the guys who are playing the best are the guys that are 15 to 25 or 30 on the world rankings, which is totally unusual. So does that open up 20, 25 guys a chance to win here? I don't know.
I wonder.
You know, I still love Justin Thomas. I'd still think John Rahm. I mean, if you could take those two guys every single week, by the end, you know, when it's, life's over, you're going to have a lot of wins, you know, basically, right?
No doubt. So, I'm on record as saying I like Cam Smith. And it's interesting when I've told people that, some people's reactions like, wow. And I'm kind of shrugging, think, well, he's the 6th ranked player in the world. He's won twice. The display he put on at Sawgrass was ridiculous. And he has that ability to go just where it's almost like your mind goes blank and you make 5 birdies and 6-7 holes. And you've told me this forever, Andy, you can have a 5-6 hole stretch where you can win a tournament. And that happens typically Sunday here, but Smith, in my opinion, feels like a guy who you combine ability to make a ton of birdies, having won, great putter, has been a runner up here. I don't know what else you'd want on your list of, I like this guy than that.
I think you could argue he's the best putter in professional golf right now. I think you could say that. Mm-hmm. I saw the exhibition he put on at Kapalua. It was ridiculous. I mean,
34 under
par. That's a best ball team score. You know, it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
He made putts all over the place. And those greens have a lot of grain in them. They've got quite a bit of slope in them. And then he won on totally different kinds of greens at the TPC where he putted great. So this guy just can putt. I mean, that's the bottom line. He's a great putter and he's gotten a ton of confidence and he's starting to believe in himself. This is a player that didn't really believe 100% on himself until the last year or so. And he's starting to do that. And you're seeing the rewards to that.
The list is fairly predictable, but I think this major more than any other leads to that, because this is something we'll talk about on the preview show about a player like, to your point, Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, guys that haven't won here that were ranked in the top 10. Why this place, often what you've done here in the past is way more important than what you've done recently anywhere else. What is it about the place that just flips the switch for people?
Well, I think first of all, there are certain golf courses that players just absolutely fall in love with and they feel like it fits their game beautifully. I don't think there's any of these younger players that this place fits better than Jordan Spieth. He's had great experience here. He's won here. He could have won a couple other times here. He's a fantastic pitcher and chipper of the golf ball. I mean, he's so good with his wedge around the greens. And this is a golf course. I don't care how good you are. You're going to miss enough greens that you have to hit some fancy, fancy pitch shots before the week's over. He's great at that.
Is that something that could discount a guy like Hovland, who's so good, but that area is such a caution flag that liking him here is, I don't know.
Well, Hovland is one of the handful of the best ball strikers that we've got in professional golf. But when he does miss a green, he struggles to get it up and in. And that's a big deal. I mean, if you miss a green and you pitch it 4 feet or 3 feet or 2 feet and you pitch it 8 feet, that's a huge difference. The percentages change dramatically from 3 feet to 8 feet. And he's a wonderful player and he'll figure it out. You know, that's chipping is something you can figure out and you can learn. He's going to win a lot of tournaments. He's going to win some major championships before he's done, but I'm not so sure he's quite ready here yet.
I mean, he's ranked fourth in the world because he's played a ton of good golf. He's fine. It's not that he's awful. It's just that isn't to the level. Look, you combine his ball striking and Spieth's short game and have, you know, meet you in the winner's circle. What size is it? 44 what? I mean, we'll meet you Sunday night. I thought it was interesting, though, about Spieth, something that may make our show on Wednesday, may not. The question was posed to you, like, Scheffler's won 3 of 5 or 6 starts and Spieth doesn't arrive like that. But who you put one or if it was a head to head, right? Scheffler versus Spieth, you know, I understand if your answer is Spieth.
And I think that's, you could argue that. I mean, his history here, history at this this event probably means more than history at any other professional golf tournament. It's a combination of a lot of things, but it's the golf course and it's the greens and it's understanding how to play here. And we haven't talked about, with the wind going to blow this weekend, you're going to see some guys embarrassed because it swirls in these pine trees. And you can throw up all the grass you want and all that kind of stuff. It doesn't make any difference because it's blowing a totally different direction, two different places that the ball is going to have to go through in the air. So it's as difficult a place I think I've ever played golf to understand what the wind's doing. And you know, if you've played here enough, if the wind's blowing down the 13th fairway, it's going to be blown a certain way at the 12th green. If you haven't seen that 10 times, not just once or twice, but at least 10 times where you can trust it, you're not going to believe it and you're going to hit the ball in the water.
It really is a fascinating place in that regard. And it appears, and I mean, look, they said a couple of days ago, I'm looking and Tuesday looked bad. It was. It appears that if it's going to be windy, the windiest day will be Friday afternoon. The Tiger got the early late, which I think the club's smart in that regard. You want to give the guy that's the biggest story the most reasonable amount of time to allow himself to recover. And if you go early, late, then that provides that.
It's really good for ratings on Friday afternoon.
Well, I mean, again, look, just like I always say with the NCAA tournament, you know, CBS, TBS, it's a television show. Never forget that. We got a television show here too. We're happy to be bringing you Thursday, Friday coverage on ESPN. But if you're out there Wednesday afternoon when that wind's cooking, man, this golf course can be a spooky place. There's some shots that are just really hard, as Andy alludes to trust and commit to the swing. So many people love it, right? So many guys talk of the same thing, drive down Magnolia Lane. Real quickly, I saw JJ Spahn, who won last week down in Texas, and it was so cool. I almost chased him to the first tee just to say, hey, I was so excited to see how well you played because I knew it meant you were going to be here. And his agent said, he told me, man, driving down Magnolia Lane, that's something, right? I mean, he didn't know last week that he was going to be here. And there he is. He just won. And does it change his life? Well, it changes the trajectory of his career. A winner is now here. You know, job security, pot full of money, a lot of stuff. But I watched him hit that first tee ball on one, piped it right down the middle. And I thought, how cool is that? Guy didn't know on Sunday morning when he woke up, he'd be standing where he was Monday afternoon, but there he was. And what I'm getting at is people love the place. When you played it, how did you feel about it?
It was a whole different world. It was a huge event. It was the biggest, we talk about it, growing up in the Midwest, Augusta National, the Masters, was the rite of spring. You knew it was time to get your clubs out of the closet and start hitting some balls because the Masters is on television. I can remember, where I was when the Nicklaus, Johnny Miller, Tom Weisskopf 75 Masters was, watching that. You remember those kind of things. But it was a golf course that I really felt like, when I first played here, that I can figure this place out. I was going to play well here. I was going to win here. It didn't work out that way. The lowest round of golf I shot in the tournament here happened to be the very first round I played, the Thursday of my first year. And then the second day was one of the worst rounds I've ever played. And I played basically the same quality of golf each day. One day, it was the perfect get it below the hole, every hole, putting up the hills. It was, I said, get done. I said, man, that was easy. The next day I had it in the wrong place on every single hole, spinning it off into the lakes, the whole deal. I shot like 15 shots higher. You can't do that. But the memory I have from that day, it was one of the worst, most miserable days I've ever spent, is walking up to the 18th green and people still clapped. Mm-hmm. You're embarrassed. You're playing terrible. You're embarrassed that people actually are being nice to you. You didn't deserve it.
Heckle me. I deserve it.
That's right. Throw something at me. And it's an amazing place, and it's a hard golf course to play. It's a hard golf course to walk, and the guys that figure it out have such great runs here. You look at the records of a handful of guys over the years, from Player to Nicklaus to Palmer to Raymond Floyd to Tom Watson. These guys just play great here every single year, and they're all good putters. They all like to work the ball from right to left. They had some great records here.
I know 12 is an obvious answer just because we get why that would be such a scary shot. Got to be perfect. If it leaks a little bit right, you run out of ground, et cetera. What's the shot that maybe people wouldn't know, but for reasons maybe you could explain, was just terrifying?
Well, I think that early in the round, where for years no one even knew what the front nine looked like here, and over the last 5 or 10 years or so, you're getting a glimpse of the third hole, the fourth hole, the fifth hole. I thought those three holes were the most difficult stretch of golf on the golf course. And this sounds silly because the third hole is this little teeny short hole, but you could make a six there with the front left pin. It was a 70 or 80, 90 yard shot was terrifying. Mm-hmm. Very much like the same length shot at 15. You're playing, if you have to lay up there, it was almost easier to go for that green in two than to lay up and then have to worry about that downhill, 70, 80, 90 yard shot that if you hit it perfectly, you'd probably spin it in the water. If you didn't get it quite right, it'd go over the green. Other than that, it was easy. But the tee shot at four, the long par three, was always a very tough shot, and the approach shot to the fifth hole. So I thought that three hole stretch to me really set up your day. If you could par one, birdie two, which is a fairly easy par five, and then par three, four, and five, man, you're off to the races. But boy, those holes could just absolutely grab you and strangle you.
Last one on the way out, the shot that you love, that for whatever reason, it was fit your eye and you had, is there one that you can close your eyes right now in your mind and just see it? Like, I loved the approach on whatever. Is there one that was the shot?
I think standing on the top of the hill at 15 after a really good tee shot and you're sitting there with at one iron or a two iron back in our day, not seven irons like they play now. you know, that was, there was a sprinkler up there that was a 236 to the front of the green. And I felt like if I could hit past that sprinkler, I had a chance to go at that green. Sometimes it was the three woods, but you know, you felt like you had a chance. But to stand on the top of that hill and to execute a one or two or three iron, hit it way up in the air and have the ball stop on the green there, that was such a wonderful shot.
That's why we fly him here and give him the robust per diem. And the poor guy has to share a house with me all these years. It's such a joy. And this is great fun. Like you and I, yep, we could do this for hours. We will.
Absolutely.
We will on Wednesday afternoon if you're interested in more coverage leading up to our coverage of the Masters Thursday afternoon, 3 Eastern. Of course, ESPN Plus has got everything else covered. It's Andy North, man. This is great fun to do.
Thanks.
I'll look forward to sitting next to you Wednesday and all week long, my man. Thanks.
Thanks.
Again, just to keep you guys honest, I'm going to get that tweet like, why aren't you on TV? Okay, well, because we're on at 3 on ESPN regular. Prior to that, ESPN Plus. Updates all morning long on SportsCenter. If you're interested in Tiger, some of you might not. Some of you aren't. Not everyone is. 10:34 Eastern, that's his tee time. ESPN Plus will have all that stuff. It'll be me and Andy North. We got Matt Barry here. We got Sage Steele here. We got Michael Eaves is here. Michael Collins is here. We got Gene Wojciechowski here. I'm forgetting, if I'm forgetting anybody, I don't mean to, but a cast of zillions here to cover this event that is, look, it's exciting always. You've heard me talk about it. It's my favorite week to get out on the road, see friends and cover an event. But, you know, the fact that Woods is here, I'm astounded. I'm never astounded. I legitimately am this week. Didn't think it was happening, but it is. Dude's going to play. So giddy up. We'll be here to cover it. Appreciate you being with us. Stanford Steve, love you, pal. Get home safe, and we'll see y'all next week.